representatives in attendance today, March 5th, Representative Locke, Representative Boone, Representative Cowdery, Larson, and Schultz. I want to take up first, together, if you will, House Bill 448 and House or Senate substitute, sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 350. Reading both alike has to do with the creating the Alaska United States Olympic Trust Fund, providing for an effective date. We do have some position papers from the House side. I see we have a fiscal note of $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000, $1,000,000 Mrs. Bettersworth, I think you at one time stated that you had no objection to us using the Senate bill. Is that correct? We also, let me see, what else did we do? Okay. There's five questions that have been drawn up by Mr. Frank from just a minute, let's get organized here. We'll get that way one of these days. There were some questions. Mr. Bettersworth has addressed those questions in the memo that's in your packets. It's dated March 2nd. By May, this bill is substantially the same as Mr. Bettersworth, House Bill 448, and he's requesting the committee pass out SB 350 without amendment. In addition, I've addressed below some of the concerns expressed by the members of the committee during the hearing. One, the state chairman of the Alaska U.S. Olympic Trust Fund is appointed by the U.S. Olympic Committee. The state chairman then appoints the members of the Alaska Committee. Is that, are there any questions regarding that? Do you have that in front of you?
I don't.
Yes, you do. Understand where I'm at?
No. Barbara, just tell me this
spot. Let me see that. You got the same.
It looks different to me.
No, this is different.
Yeah.
That's not the one. There's one, a memo from Mr. Bettersworth, which is in 448 folder, I believe. There it is. Oh, down below that number.
I don't think I have it, Mr. Chairman.
Have you got 448 there?
This one's 350, and this one was 448.
Well, look at
but here's some more stuff on top of my desk.
Okay.
It came in late, up
there. Yeah.
You see where I'm at, Mr. Miller? Mr. Miller is in attendance.
Oh, I've got it. Thank you.
You have it? You have it, Mr. Miller?
448, yes, I do.
It's the letter from Mr. Bettersworth addressing five questions the committee had. I think that answers number one. Any questions on number one? Number two, the estimate of private donations is very hard to make. The committee expects to have fundraisers, auctions, etc., with a $1 million goal. The state match for private donations is limited, though, because $350 is a match cap of $1 million for private donations. And I believe that would be appropriate, up to $1 million and not to exceed. Any questions? Do you have any questions, sir? Any questions from the committee? Item three, the revenue.
Just briefly, Mr. Chairman.
Larson.
I guess my questions would be the same ones that I kind of asked before. With the matching fund, which is state involvement, it's committing a non-specified amount of money. for really an unspecified purchase by a committee that is made up at this time really of unknown people who have goals and objectives which aren't clear. And I'm just wondering, public policy is carrying that procedure out. And I have a hard time saying this because, all my life has been involved in some type of athletics. And I guess I just wish that I could support this piece of legislation, but with all those unknowns, I'm having a hard time.
Is there anyone here who would like to answer some of those objections at this point?
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Mike Scott. I'm a professional assistant to Senator Ferguson. On that issue, when it came out of the Senate, we decided that we wouldn't actually be funding anything this year other than the $10,000, which appears now as a $15,000 increment, but rather come back next year after we know what the contributions are looking like and pass a supplemental or make it part of the regular capital budget, since this bill is repealed as of June 30, 1985. So.
Mr. Chairman, if there were some projects clearly identified, I have no problem supporting the appropriation to carry those projects through, but we don't even know what those projects are as yet.
We provided to the committee chairman's staff a memo from former Senator Ed Mertes to Senator Ferguson, where he outlined the potential expenditure of those funds and the members of the committee. It was about a 3-page memo. And it shows who the members of the committee are. Yeah, right there. And it should address that. It should address who the committee members are and really where the funding would go.
Yeah,
yes. And while we're at the point of funding, the fiscal note the Department of Administration sent over under contractual on the Senate side, it was $10,000. For some unknown reason, it's gone to $15,000 because the same explanation is still there. And then what they show under grants and claims is the maximum allowable. But we would say just stick with the $10,000 as opposed to $15,000. We'll wait till next year to see what those contributions look like so we have a better handle on how much we should be funding this year, or should be funding for the contributions that are made this year.
That $10,000 fiscal note, you will go with that with your bill, with the Senate bill, right?
Yes, sir.
I do note in the legislation that we did in the House version, which I believe it would be appropriate to do that with this bill here, to delete and amend this bill to an extent. That extent would be to line 12 of the Senate Bill 350 and 13. Wholeheartedly support of the Alaska United States Olympic Trust Fund deleting Winter Olympic Games in Yugoslavia, the Summer Games in Los Angeles by reference to a specific function.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Yes, sir. On the Senate floor, that amendment did occur on the sponsor substitute. They did take out reference to Yugoslavia and the Los Angeles for 1984 under the intent section.
Okay, then. It would read then, if we were to do this on line 11, Olympic symbolic of Olympic athletes, and to register wholehearted support of the Olympic Games, Alaska
Games.
United States Olympic, the Olympic Games.
Period.
Right, period.
And then,
therefore the legislature. Okay. And the wholehearted support of the and I would move that we amend it by having them deleting language on line 12 being 1984 Winter Olympic Games in Yugoslavia, and the 1984 summer, deleting that, leaving in Olympic Games, deleting on line 13 in Los Angeles, California, and continuing on. Are there any objections to that amendment?
Would you read that in context, Mr. Chairman?
Yes. I will start middle way on line 11. And to register wholehearted support of the Olympic Games. Mm-hmm. Therefore, the legislature shall establish an Alaska United States Olympic Trust Fund. Does that make sense, Mr. Miller?
It makes sense. Are we also going to be considering these proposed committee substitutes? Because what you were doing there doesn't quite jive up with them, however.
You mean with the House bill?
Yeah.
Well, that's what we want to do, is get the two of them together and use the Senate bill.
I'm having a little trouble because I don't seem to have a copy of the Senate bill. All right, I might have dismissed it.
It's in 350. It's another quarter.
Oh, it's in, okay. That's fine. Fine. I have no objection, Mr. Chairman.
There are no objections to order. I believe the other one is on under section 2. Did we not scratch out during 1984 and 85 fiscal year? During the 1984 fiscal year, $1 a month shall be withdrawn from the salary of each officer and employee unless the person requested not to be involved in the program. You see, we've got a different one in here. The Senate bill so states that, but the bill that we had in the House, we put in there, $1 a month shall be withdrawn from the salary of each state officer and each state or University of Alaska employee who requests involvement in the program under D, salary deductions, etc. Rather than, you see, that turns the whole thing over.
Yes, exactly. That was the one major change that was made to the bill from an opt-in to an opt-out. And we did get the approval of APEA before proceeding with that amendment. And would urge its adoption. It does what it changes. The department would still send out a form to every state employee.
Sure.
They would say on that form, no, they don't want to be involved, and send that back. Before it would have been, it sent out a form to mark, yes, we want to be involved. So it does goes from an opt out to an opt in.
So we'd rather have the language, I think, in the House bill than we would in the Senate bill.
Well, we have APA support for the Senate version, so we would urge the Senate. Adoption.
Mr. Chairman, we never really reduced that to a vote on this committee, but speaking personally, if we have the blessings of the employee association on it, I would certainly prefer the opt-out language, because quite frankly, we're just going to raise a whole lot more money for the Olympics that way. And if the people have an ample and clearly stated opportunity to opt out, which I think they definitely should have, and I don't have any question in my mind they would have, I think nothing else the APA would have to insist that people know that they have a complete opportunity to opt out. But having said that, I think that you're going to get at least twice as much money with the Senate language as we would have under the original House language, and I support that. We're only talking about $1 a month anyway. So.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Larson?
Yeah, I go back to the old theory that no tax is a good tax unless it costs you, unless you get more from it than it costs you to collect it. And what I'm wondering here is that is there a difference in the administration costs between the opting out or the opting in provision? Would one be cheaper to administer than the other?
There shouldn't be, because all they're changing, they're using the same form. All they're doing is changing it. You want to stay in, or do you want to stay, or do you want to get out? And it just, so the form should say the same, just a couple words to change. Although we have no explanation as to why the contraction went from 10 to 15, since they used the same rationale on both this one. So we would urge the 10,000 just for economy's sake.
Yes, Representative Black.
I have a real problem with the opt-out, and I'm not really sure why. I have to agree with Mr. Miller. It certainly will raise a lot more money, but I have a real problem with just putting something into law that says that even a very small sum of your wages will be taken out of your salary unless you take the time to sign some form that would deny someone that right. I can hardly believe that it's even proper. And I know that the representative from APEA, which was here before, said she didn't have any problem with it, but they hadn't really discussed it with her board. And I'm wondering if even the employees have been advised of this in their little newsletter.
We haven't forwarded. We haven't produced a newsletter since the hearing on this bill. I will point out that the time they're going to take to fill out the form will be the employer's time.
Would you give your name, please, and affiliation for the record?
Sure, Shelley.
Can we get that, Elaine? Okay. I kind of have the same feeling that unless you say if you got too busy or out of town, you're out of something, that money's going to be taken out whether you like it or not. I guess that bothers me too. Whereas in the bill, in the House bill, it says $1 amount shall be withdrawn on an employee who requests involvement. I'll grant you it'll raise more money. But is it right to take it out and then ask? I don't know. I still have some mixed emotions. Any other comments from the committee? What's the pleasure of the committee? Do you want to accept it?
Just once again, I think the difference is if you really want to make some money for the Olympics, you do it the Sandsburg way. If you want to just kind of do a nice thing, but not really count on raising very much money, you do it the other way.
Well, why doesn't the city then, when you come to a cancer societies, childbirth societies, all the rest of them to collect
United
money, United Way, why don't they just say, okay, public, we're going to take it out unless you request not to?
No, in the first place, because they can't without the authority of somebody saying it. This is a law that would say that in this instance, we have found sufficient merit in this project that we do it. But
I think that is an imposition on the right of people to donate monies to their favorite charities by stating you will have this taken out of your pay unless, of course, you write me and you tell me and you sign this and states we will not take it out of your pay.
Well, as a practical matter, though, they will, each employee, say if we're all in this room, we'd all get a form, and that form would just, we'd check yes or no, really, on the form, and so that the procedure that they have to go through won't be changed, whether we use the opt-in or the opt-out. They're still going to have to go through getting a piece of paper and saying yes or no. And it is true that, so as far as a practical matter, the way it's handled, it wouldn't change. But philosophically, there may be.
Of course, with this one, if I may, with the Senate's version of it, you wouldn't have to send out anything.
Yes, they would. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a requirement. Absolutely.
Okay, Mr. Larson.
One way, if an employee didn't turn it in, there would be no deductions. The other way, if the employee didn't turn it in, it would automatically be deducted from this check. So it does make a difference.
They have. It would be given to them. It won't take but 30 seconds to fill it out. Go one way or the other and just hand it right back to them at the end time.
Yeah, well, it just appears to me that if we're going to put in laws to do this on this particular function, then they ought to raise all the money they can for what the purpose is.
Mr. Chairman, if I may continue to an earlier point, when I asked what the money was to be used for, I have read Mr. Murdy's memo, and it says, will be utilized solely by the U.S. Olympic Committee, Alaska, within the state of Alaska. And then the part which I still don't know, it says, to promote and expand official exports for secondary students in Alaska high school and grade school. That's what it says the Alaska Matching Fund will be used for. Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, he lists, I think on one of the sheets there, he lists about 8 or 10 different sports that would be included.
Yeah, so and here it says, here is a sample of the Olympic-type sports that will be discussed.
Right. Those would be the parameters. From everything that we've gotten so far, those would be the identified sports to date. The Olympic Committee would stand and figure out then, they would contact every school district. Every school district then expressing a desire and say, naming any other additional sports, they would compile those things and then go back to each individual school district and then say negotiate or you know set up cooperatively some sort of program, and that's how it's designed.
Representative Locker.
I'm afraid that I do not read Section 3 the same way the aide for Senator Ferguson reads it. I read it like the chairman. It says, during the 1984-85 fiscal year, $1 a month shall be withdrawn from the salary of each officer and employee of the state unless the person requests not to be involved in the program.
Under C.
That's right. So what assurance do we have that they're going to get that one little piece of paper that is the same whether they check it yes or no?
Yes.
That's what I'm asking.
Yes, subsection C.
Yeah, provide all state officers and employees with a form addressed to the governor or the governor's designee in which he intends not to participate may be indicated.
Okay, but that's it. It doesn't say that it'll be the same thing for yes or no, and that everyone will have to take the time to either check yes or no.
Let's see, the department's fiscal note, they say on their position paper.
I mean, if the same amount of time is going to be used up, then it doesn't much matter.
Yes, the same amount of time will be used. Because in the earlier version, on the first fiscal note, the way we had it as the House did, they said the exact same thing. The language said that it just reversed it and said, for those choosing to participate in. So we just changed a couple words, actually, for the form. So it would be the same form, just a couple words is changed, and it's still a checkoff.
For no.
For no.
Anything about
yes.
Yeah.
No, that's what I'm saying. The earlier way would have been yes, and you're checking off for yes.
Well, okay, misunderstood you. I thought you said everyone's going to get a form, and they're either going to say yes or no. And if the form is returned, as Mr. Larson said,
right.
Okay, what you're going to say then is that not everyone's going to get a form, just the ones that request one that says no or else, everyone will be provided
no,
with a no form?
No. Every employee will be receiving a form. Every employee, say if the Senate version is adopted, would check that they do not want to participate and immediately hand that back to the
Secretary. Okay, thank you. I've got it.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
No, Mr. Miller.
I might point out, too, that the memo from Representative Bedsworth gives us further guidelines on how some of that money would be allocated, and I think it's a good allocation. They're talking about 20% for encourage cross-country ski and facilities upgrade, 20% for the same thing for alpine ski and facilities upgrade, 50% seed money to start new Olympic sports, and those sports are listed then in the other letter, and then 10%, which is, I think, good business, remaining fund for contingency and encouragement of other Olympic programs. So I think we have a pretty good handle on how it's going to be used. I don't think there's any question on that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes,
I'm agreeing with what Representative Miller is saying right now. However, I think we're just getting at the tip of the iceberg. Once we establish, say, for example, the first thing, an archery program, I don't care how good your facilities are, if you don't have some type of competition, you aren't going to develop the Olympic-type athlete, in which that competition is going to come a tremendous amount of additional expenses for the transportation and so forth to take part in those various events. And you could go right down the line, whether it be shooting or cycling, or the biathlon team or handball teams, just providing the facilities isn't the only answer. Seedman, that's all it is. Yeah, I know. That's worrisome.
Well, I guess we could sit here and design a bill that's going to tell them exactly what to do with the money, and I don't think this committee is capable of doing that or should be able to have that.
I think it should be just the opposite. They should tell us what they need done and then ask us for the money.
I'd rather leave that up to the discretion of the board that's being established. They know what they're doing. We're not in that business.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think it's good government policy to say, here's $1 million, do with what you want. I think they should tell us what they want, and then we should make the determination whether it's worth $1 million worth of taxpayers' money.
Hasn't that been spelled out in that memorandum from Mr. Bedsworth?
If you think the language I read says that, it's been spelled out. However, I don't think what I read spells it out.
Mr. Bedsworth, do you have any comments about that? Mr. Bedsworth, would you have any comments on that?
As far as the detail as to what they're going to do, I agree with you, Mr. Chairman. That is not the prerogative of the committee. It's a concept, it's a guidelines, set it forth, and if that's what we want to do, then we should do it. If we don't, well, that's something else we can do.
Is section, or line 14, line page 2, section 3 of this act is repealed June 30th, 1985. Are there any, I note that on the other bill we had a question on that. Is there any further question on that? Anybody have any further questions? It's the intent of the chair to move this bill out. Sponsor substitute for Senate Bill number 350, Representative Locker.
Mr. Chairman, is it your intent to move it out unamended? Are we to consider an amendment that would opt in rather than opt out?
The Senate bill does have the opt what? Opt out?
Opt out.
Correct.
Which makes more sense.
You're not a state employee whose salary is being taken away.
What? Well, Ms. Shelley, what do your employees think?
I haven't heard it specifically from large numbers of employees since our last hearing on this bill. I assure you that every employee would get a form under the provisions of the bill, and we would make it known to them that if they did not want those funds deducted from their salary, that they would have to sign that form and return it to the employer. I assume that the forms would be provided at the work site and collected at the work site, so it's on the employer's time and each person's option.
How would it be? It was the other way around.
That's the same difference. The employees, again, will be provided a form and given the opportunity to opt in.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just add to that, imagine, if you will, every single state employee in this state being told, your legislature has passed a law that unless you sign this piece of paper, a portion of your salary will go to a very good cause. Now, that's what we're saying here. Unless you sign a form, a portion of your salary will go to a very good cause. Not your union, not the aide to the senator, but your legislature. And you know, frankly, I think it's quite unusual, and I even question that it's proper, that someone would have to sign something to keep something from coming out of their salary. I understand union dues come out, but people know that when they join the union, that dues come out of their salary, and taxes, and other withholding.
But to think that
we're talking, I mean, what's next?
Mr. Josephson, would you care to enlighten us on any of this at all? Won't you come up front, please?
I'll be fine here.
Just come up front. Yes,
Russ Josephson, Legislative Affairs, Legal Services. I guess the only comment I've got is on a whole different topic altogether, which is the effective date. I would just suggest that we pick up the immediate effective date that we put into the later version of the Senate bill, which would give the Department of Administration more advanced notice and time to prepare their form. It would be better for them to know as soon as possible so that they would be doing it once the bill's passed, whereas in a House bill, we've got the form to be distributed before July 1, but the effective date is until June 30th. So they could watch the bill, and if it were evident it was going to pass, they could prepare and distribute the form, but it probably would be better if we had that immediate effective date.
Well, the Senate bill has an effective immediate. The House bill, we're discussing the Senate bill, of which the amendment that we have already agreed on to the Senate bill is on line 12 and 13. Those are the only amendments that I can recall. Now, where am I off on this thing?
Well, I guess I'm turned over. I thought we were deleting the language in the first section of House Bill 488.
Negative.
So that it read identical with the language in Section 1 of the Senate bill.
Yeah, that's where we got mixed up. Was doing 448 language to 350. Actually, the First Amendment that you proposed was taken care of on the Senate floor.
Okay.
On the Senate floor. So that amendment does exist. Or the version, the Senate version already takes care of it.
Well, what bill am I working off here?
The right one, 355.
All right, what is this later version you're talking about?
This one, right here.
Where?
Amended.
That, is that another bill?
No, does it have amended on the end?
Mm-hmm.
I don't see an amendment, and that's the only bill that I'm working off. I'm wondering. I'm not on the same piece of music you're on.
Oh, no, you're. Oh, yeah.
God, right. We're singing different tunes. Can anybody enlighten me about where the bill is?
This is the amended version.
I'm excuse me about that.
And that's the only change. The very amendment that you suggested is the only change between sponsor substitute 350 and sponsor substitute 350 amended.
I move to rescind all our action on sponsor substitute for Senate Bill number 350. Any objections? So ordered. Now we're talking about the amendment bill, which we don't need an amendment that we just did to the other one. Now, why did you say that an hour ago?
I was reading the same bill. I thought we were amending the House bill.
No. We're going to disregard the House bill.
Right.
Is that correct, Mr. Bedsworth?
That's correct.
And we're going to use the Senate bill. Amendment. Okay.
Right, now we're all on the same.
All right. Now we're on the same music. Well, I couldn't figure that out either. Mr. Larson?
Yes, just a couple of quick questions, Mr. Chairman. I guess the first one would be for Ms. Shelley. I'm kind of surprised to hear that the state employees do not have a basic policy as to opting in or opting out of certain provisions. But you're saying they do not have any policy.
This particular, the subject of opting in or opting out has never arisen before. Our position is that employees should be have an ample opportunity not to participate in the program if they don't want to participate. And if it is, as the Senate bill has passed, then we will make sure through our communications that they know they have to take an affirmative action to get out.
Mr. Chairman, I would bet after this piece of legislation that they will be taking a position, because I can see any number of very fine and worthwhile groups coming and wanting to do the same thing. As I understand, there's only room for about 8 or 10 of them, because that's how many punch places there are on the various card. So they'll be scrambling to get the other 9, I'm sure. My second question, Mr. Chairman, would be, if we run this by the AG's office, or Department of Law, to see if it's even legal for us to do this with the, the provision as we're proposing, in which they'll automatically be in unless they opt out.
We didn't run it by the AG's office. We did run it by our legal people, and Russ did draft it. He may have some comments, but we relied upon our legal counsel, legislative counsel, and that's how we got the bill in the form that we did.
Ms. Colville?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Perhaps could you give us an off the top of your head kind of an idea of where we're going here?
I have not looked at the bill. I'm sure our office would be happy to if we wanted to, but I haven't even have copied the bill before. Nor have I really been following it.
Mr. Chairman, how much money are we talking about? I mean, we brought this
$2 million.
Yeah, but I mean, someone that changed this opting in to opting out knows about how much more money they would hope to raise this way. And I would just like to know, for how much money for this very worthy cause are we even considering tapping people's checks before they put in writing that they wish to have? I mean, what are we doing it for? 50,000, 60,000, 100,000?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the fiscal provided by the Department of Administration on the original Senate bill, they estimated that we would raise, you could calculate out all their figures, 100% state employee participation would raise us about $225,000. They estimated, Department of Administration, on the first go-around, that with the opt-in provision, we may only capture 20% of the state employees. With the opt-out provision, we're probably looking closer at 80%, although the Department of Administration is still rather conservative. They're saying 50%. We're anticipating more. We're anticipating more like 80%, or 160,000, 180,000. We would anticipate. You can probably figure it would be 10, 20% that may decide just not to. But just I don't know what other offices have received, but on communications on 350, people have said to us, it's a great idea. Those who have objected have said, are we going to have an opportunity to get out of this thing we don't want? We said, certainly. They said, well, that we didn't quite understand that when it was reported. I guess it had been reported in some of the press, maybe not in the most insightful way, but once they understood that certainly they had the opportunity to opt out, as well, that's more palatable. And on the communications we received, that's sort of how it's broken down.
Mr. Chairman, a legal question. We are anticipating here to pay, say, 15 cents to collect $1.08, but probably more important, in Mr. Murdy's memo, he stated that only funds that were raised
by the employees' contributions could be used by the Olympic Committee outside of the state of Alaska. Now, when we're talking about spending $15,000 to implement that program, we are then talking about spending state money to put that program into being. Are we jeopardizing that portion of the program by using state money to implement the collection of private funds for the purpose outside the state of Alaska?
No, sir. In fact, this was the method that was devised so we wouldn't do violence to the U.S. Olympic Charter and where they don't accept.
But that's my question. We're spending state money to raise that private money.
Right, but it doesn't do violence to their charter, and we've checked that back through to Colorado. And
Mr. Chairman, I haven't heard from our legal counsel on that. She's sitting here.
Yeah.
I recognize this is kind of quick without any research, but from your knowledge of rights, et cetera, how does that feel to you?
I have to assure you I'm not the sports attorney for the department, but I don't see a problem with it. It is in no way mandatory, and the bill provides for notice to the employees, plus the opt-in or opt-out, whichever you decide on. So I don't think it presents any real legal problem. As long as notice is adequate for
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, what constitutes notice to the employee? Putting a piece of paper on their desk that they may or may not see, or having them sign a piece of paper to say that they have received it?
At this point, we've said in the bill that a form shall be made available to them. The department has said in their fiscal note that their supervisors or whatever would disseminate that, and so hopefully there would be the broad coverage. I'm sure most of us that if we heard that those forms hadn't gotten around and people hadn't received any adequate notice, then I'm sure this time next year we'll take a long, hard look at any money that would be, any matching money that would be appropriate for this purpose, if in fact if this was handled improperly.
Mr. Josephson, I wondered if you could enlighten us a little bit regarding some possible constitutional issue with this.
Mr. Chairman,
would you come up here, please? So I want the mics to pick you up.
About an hour ago, I was handed a copy of the position paper. I think that's what you're referring to. And it indicated that Department of Law thought they might have a problem, and they cited Article 1 of the Constitution, which is all the individual rights that we have. I would presume that they were thinking about due process, which is to say precisely that the issue that's just been raised is notice to the employee that they were going to lose some amount of property by a procedure. It was my feeling in drafting the bill that the notice required in all the versions of the bill to the employee, whether it's opt-in or opt-out, was a notice sufficient to give them an opportunity to take a position one way or the other on their dollar, their property. I don't feel that there's a sufficient constitutional problem with it myself. Again, all I know about the department's hesitation is what's in the position paper, which is extremely broad, Article 1, I presume due process, but I don't have any problem with that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Josephson. Okay. All right. Any further questions for Mr. Scott? Thank you, Mr. Scott.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Miller.
So we can have a question properly before us. I'll just move that we pass out the sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 250 or 350 amended with individual recommendations.
Do we adopt that?
Object.
There is an objection. We will take a voice count. Those in favor of the...
Mr. Chairman?
Not, yes.
When would be the proper time in this committee process to make the amendment for the opting out, or opting in rather than opting out, or are you precluding an opportunity to do that? Once the bill is passed out, unamended, of course, it's too late, and that's why I object.
Well, what is the pleasure of the committee?
Okay, it would be my pleasure to amend Mr. Representative Miller's. I know it, but you can amend the motion.
All right.
To state that this would be an opt-out
or an opt-in rather than an opt-out facilitator. And I don't have the exact language, but the staff could certainly do that. It would be very easy for them to turn it around. And then I would like to vote on that amendment.
There's been a motion to change the language in
Section 3.
In Section 3, change it from an opt out, am I right?
Correct.
Opt out situation to an opt in. I will ask for a voice count. Mr. Schultz?
No.
Mr. Larson?
Yes.
Mr. Connery? Abood? No.
Locker, yes.
Mr. Miller?
Miller, no.
Mr. Chairman?
That one has failed.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to offer an amendment. The amendment that I'd like to offer would be on page 1, that we delete line 27, 28, 29. On page 2, that we delete lines 1, 2, and 3. Okay. And renumber the other provisions accordingly. In other words, Mr. Chairman, what that would do would be to relate the state's matching portion, the part that I feel quite strongly about, because we're committing of up to $1 million. We don't know what we're committing it for, other than some specified comments contained in the position paper. I'd be most happy at the time we have created the committee. The committee will be able to identify its needs, back to the legislature and tell the legislature what they really need to implement the program and how much it will cost, and at that time then the legislature can consider granting the money, whether it's $500,000 or whether it's $5 million. We can do the job correct.
There's the amendment. Motion's been made on the amendment.
Objection.
Mr. Miller.
Mr. Chairman, I really feel that I know that the mechanism motion is very sincere in this, but in his motion, but I think what that does, I think it almost guts the entire bill, because one of the great appeals for instance, again, getting back to public employee, to have his dollar taken out, is that he's going to give up a buck, but it's going to produce $2 for this purpose. And I think that's got great appeal, up to $1 million. If all these private donations exceed $1 million, and of course that isn't quite true anymore, but that just, the amendment totally takes the matching provisions completely out of it. Mr. Chairman, although I don't, ordinarily I argue in favor of, specificity in appropriations and that sort of thing. In this case, I think we've got sufficient guidelines that we know approximately how the money's going to be spent. We know that the broad categories under which it's going to be spent. And, I don't think we have to know down to each dollar, whether it's going to be used for archery or for cross-country skiing or for upgrading something at Alyeska, for instance, maybe for a jump or something like that. So I feel comfortable with the knowledge that we do have in the direction that the monies will be spent. And I would just propose deleting this, because what we're probably going to end up doing by deleting that is deleting $1 million in money that would be used for this purpose.
Mr. Chairman, my response would be that if the money is going to be spent in Alaska, I would like to see it spent for some type of improvements. But there again, in the position paper, this money could be spent to bring people from outside of Alaska up to Alaska for special training camps, so that most of the money can be spent then for operation and never anything be built. In other words, what I'm looking for is if we need these facilities, let's identify them so that we can adequately fund them. Let's not just open it up so that the money may be used entirely opposite of what our intent is.
Any further objections? There's a motion on the floor. Amendment. Mr. Larson's amendment. I will start from the reverse end, forward to my right. By voice count, Mr. Miller?
No.
Representative Locker?
No.
Abood, no. Mr. Cowdery, no. Mr. Larson?
How many votes can I have?
What is your vote, please?
Yes.
Mr. Schultz?
Yes.
What?
All right. That motion, that amendment has been defeated. We're back on the main motion. Are there objections to move the bill to the next committee of referral? Hearing none, so ordered. We'll take up five.
APA is having trouble with it.
What?
Senate Bill amending. Please. We'll be taking up 564. What's being passed out at the moment is the final version. The Legislative Council. Thank you. It's different style, Calvin's version. This just came in. Now then, I believe I asked Ms. Calvin to read that language, and then that would you be kind enough to. 564. It was just passed out. The new version. This is the committee substitute. Yes, ma'am, if you would.
Diane Calvin with the Department of Law. You are looking at version 2, drafted by Aspen, right? I just want to make sure that we're looking at the same version. Plus, yes. This amendment is intended to take care of Representative Miller's concern about priority of child support obligations. And it simply adds a sentence to the section that you previously considered, which says that a child support obligation under one of its sections has priority over a debt owed to an agency of the state, and a permanent fund dividend may not be taken to satisfy a debt under two of the section until any portion of the dividend necessary to satisfy a child support obligation has been taken. So it would mean that in the case of a state debt, if there was a child support obligation, 100% would go to that before the state debt could be taken.
Is that constitutionally proper?
I believe so.
And that was the only change that was made in this bill?
That's right.
Are there any questions from the committee?
Just quick, Mr. Chairman, I think I know the answer to it, but I just want to ask it to be sure. If somebody applied for both their 1983 and 84 dividends this year, and if they were in 84, this act would include them, is that right?
Well, Tom just suggested an amendment to take care of that. Administratively for the department, it would be much better if Section 2 would say this act applies to permanent fund dividends issued for 1984 and subsequent years. That really was an oversight on our part.
You didn't want to make this vehicle available for the several, probably 183 ones will be coming in, such,
right? Right. The intent is to apply it to 1984
and
subsequent years.
You
that
would then
read it, more trouble than it worth.
Right. Yeah.
You would then recommend that we change the words in for four?
Right, in Section 2. And one other change, and this is just a technical thing, in line 17, the one should appear after the word satisfy rather than.
I'm sorry. Say again?
Number one should appear after the word satisfy rather
so
than.
So reverse?
Before.
You put satisfy in front of the word, of the letter one?
Right. So it reads dividends taken to satisfy one
child
support obligation, et cetera.
All right. Now I'll move those two amendments. Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Is there anything else that you would wish to say on the bill?
No, sir. Mr. Williams, may I have some comments?
Thank you very much. Mr. Williams, do you have anything further you want to say?
Mr. Chairman, Mayor of the Committee, I agree with the committee substitute. It's no problem. We should be able to administer it, and the fiscal note basically should not change.
Thank you. Mr. Miller, does that satisfy your inquiry?
That's terrific.
Any other problems? Any other questions regarding the bill? I would ask for a movement of the bill with the amendment. Mr. Cowdery?
Yes, I'd like to make a motion to move substitute House Bill 564 as amended.
Are there objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
It'd be so nice to put a due pass on something.
It's going to hang in there long enough.
I guess so.
The next bill we'll be hearing is 535. Now, there is a March 5th letter. Do you all have that?
I don't have 535.
I'm sure if you get down in there, you'll find it. Okay. this is from Mr. Hine. Is he here? No, he isn't. Ledge Council. He has reviewed the language submitted by Humphreys Division of Retirement Benefits. The apparent purpose of the suggested amendment is to allow persons previously prohibited from continuing to cover state group life insurance when they turn 65 to get back in the program. He suggests that if the committee wishes to add this concept to the bill, the following language or language substantially similar be added to page 3 after line 16. Is there anyone here that can explain that a little bit? I guess we'll have to figure it out ourselves. What are we going to do? What? The person who prior to effective date, how does this read with you?
I have a clue.
You want to give Ms. Shelley a copy of what we're talking about? A person who prior to the effective date was ineligible to continue life insurance covered under the section because a person was 65 years of age or older, or whose coverage under the section was terminated because he did reach 65 before the effective date, is entitled to enroll for coverage of the section if the person applies for enrollment within 1 year after the effective date of the act. In other words, everybody, this person has been on this thing for years and years and years, and they reach 65, and all of a sudden they're off. What this would do is allow them to come back on there and apply for that. Mr. Yeah. Schultz?
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering, you also had an amendment that was proposed the last time, and it was from Mike, what was it?
Colin?
Yeah. Anyway, he suggested some language saying that retirees who are previously unable to enroll in optional life and life coverage because they were 65 years of age or older, retirement, or whose coverage was terminated when they reached age, but shall be given an opportunity to enroll on a one-time basis. Does that seem to be a little clearer than this one that is being proposed here? On my only question.
Yes.
I could enlighten the committee a little bit on this. This was, when I talked to Ed Hines, he passed it out of committee essentially. He wanted you to first see the language, where it was going to go in the bill, but then it became a substantive issue that involved whether you wanted this to be open-ended or you wanted a closing date after which people who opted to get back into the program would have to stop or else it could go on forever. And that kind of got into more of a substantive issue, so he wrote something that would include, you know, 1 year, they've got 1 year to get into it. And that was why we thought this was a bit more into an area that committee had made a clear decision on, even though the bill has been passed out, we can put the language in the committee substitute, if you wish.
Mr. Cutter?
I was wondering what happens to some person that's going to retire 2 years from now. Would this cover them? I mean, if their retirement date was after, beyond the 1 year after the effective date, how you get a, you know, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah.
Maybe that should be changed to 1 year after their retirement,
or
65.
Put an or. This with, or perhaps add an or to this, which would say 1 year after anyone else retired within 1 year. That qualifies or something, you know.
Shelley?
I don't think there's a problem, because if you pass the statute, then when people reach right. 65, their insurance won't ever be terminated
right.
because of age. So they would, people who are not yet retired, or not yet 65 would have a problem. It's those retirees 65 or older.
Well, wait now. Is entitled to enroll, if we put this language, is entitled to enroll for coverage under this section if the person applies for the enrollment within one year after the effective date. So in the event that I'm, let's say I'm 64 or 60, 63, and this goes into effect, I won't be 65. My retirement doesn't come up to 65.
Retirement's available. You can take regular retirement at age 55 or after 30 years of service or in some systems after 20 years of service. So you have people retiring from anywhere from age 40 to up. And so until you reach age 65, the triggering mechanism of the statute never terminates your life insurance. So it's not a problem.
Well, then, retirees who were previously unable to enroll in optional life insurance because they were 65 at retirement whose coverage was terminated when they reach shall be given an opportunity to enroll on a one-time basis. This language in here that we just read out of the first one covers the same thing, then, I would assume.
Right. It covers those retirees who have had their life insurance terminated because they are 65. Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Schultz?
Yeah, I was going to say on page 2, lines 22 through 26, says a person receiving benefits under... Okay, may continue life insurance coverage that was in effect under this section at the time of termination of employment by the state or whatever or agency. I think that simply speaks to it right there.
Yeah.
When they get ready to retire, they may continue under the group policy.
Well, this language here would cover it then, right? The language that Mr. Hine submitted.
I don't have any trouble with the language that he's got there. None at all.
Then we could make that. Are there any other questions on that? Mr. Miller, do you see what we're doing?
I'd like to.
Yeah, all right.
In other words, after page 3, after line 16,
add a new paragraph.
11.
Yeah.
Mr. Miller, maybe I can just ask a question to Terry. What's the present situation when a public employee that I thought after age 65 they were now covered?
No. You have to terminate that age 65.
Even if they pay for it themselves, is that
even
right?
Even if
that's
they
right.
pay for it themselves. The statute requires that it be terminated.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that. I just saw this in brackets. If anybody had asked me, I'd have said that if you pay for it yourself, you can continue it.
But you don't have that option right now, then,
no,
do you?
No, correct.
Yeah. This does give you the option.
This does, yeah. Well,
I think is a very important thing.
Yeah. If I may, that's what brought the whole thing about. There's a few people that... once they got into that position, could hardly believe that they weren't eligible for some kind of a group, life insurance, and it was just terminated.
I move that we add line 17 through whatever it takes, add a new section.
Okay.